it can feel almost isolating to be in that weird in-between spot. Mm-hmm. And not so much in-between that I'm in between two cultures, but I'm in between two vantage points. The perspective I've learned to develop on a lot of things, not just language, is the plurality of things and not looking at an objective one way. Mm-hmm. Just like there's no one way to be Filipino. That was something I really struggled with for a long, long time.
This is Drift, Immigration and Identity in America. I'm your host, Melissa Camara, a Hawaii-based artist and conservationist, and in this series of interviews, I'll be talking to immigrants, their descendants, and Native people to round out our series of interviews of young Filipinos in Alaska. Next up is Kirk Gallardo. His is that of the perspective of a young person born in the Philippines.
My name is Kirk Gallardo. I am 30 years old, and I work as the Education Interpretation Manager at the Anchorage Museum. I was born in Baguio City, Philippines, which is about a four-hour drive north of Manila. So in 1999, my family and I migrated from Baguio to San Diego, and then from San Diego to Anchorage, Alaska.
So tell me about life up until the time you left.
Let's see. I remember playing with my cousins a lot. I have a lot of cousins. I have 20 of them. I'm just running around playing in my grandpa's house, having huge family gatherings every Sunday to celebrate Sunday. You know, various street foods. Binatog, which is like white corn kernels with margarine, sugar, and shredded coconut. You have taho, which is one of my all-time favorites, which is silk tofu, caramel almost, but, or like a simple syrup, but brown. And then sago, which is like tapioca pearls.
What was your parents and your economic, socioeconomic standing in Baguio that you, when you folks left?
So my dad had a practice. He was a pediatrician. And my mom was the department head of nursing at St. Louis University.
You folks were well off then, I imagine, right?
Comparatively speaking, yes. Mm-hmm. But like my experience growing up was being in the same house as my grandpa. Mm-hmm. And that was all I had known in the Philippines. But it turns out that, you know, my dad had his own house and he moved in with my grandpa later on. He did have a maid. Mm-hmm. But my parents would come home, and that was one thing I remember was running up to them, and, you know, asking things like, well, what toys did you guys bring me? Or
pretty incredible. So what would have prompted your family to want to leave, their parents and your cousins and for America?
My parents didn't get to choose their career paths necessarily, or that they had a very narrow set of options, and that they wanted us just to have that choice. I think my dad ultimately made the choice that he felt was good for the family, and I followed through with that.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't ask you about brothers and sisters.
Yeah, so I have three older sisters. I'm the baby.
The only son.
The only son, yep.
No pressure.
No pressure at all. But also, just being the youngest is a lot of privilege as a child, and being the only boy. So that was kind of a struggle where, you know, my dad would put a lot of his aspirations on too, and he put his aspirations on all of us, obviously, but I think he wanted a son that was very much into, like, cars and all of these, like, typically very masculine things. And lo and behold, I am not a sports fan whatsoever. I think the one, like, closest thing to sport that I got into was boxing. And a lot of that was the influence of Manny Pacquiao showing up.
Mm. What sort of ideas, both socially and politically, did you grow up with your parents?
So my family is pro-Marcos, at least the older generation. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I would just hear like, oh, the only time we had any order around here was during Marcos era. My mom would tell me about that people didn't know what they were talking about when they'd criticize that, or they'd talk about the younger folks criticizing it, saying that they have no idea what it was like. I think that's just privilege. Like, we were fairly well off. We were very much, at least my family was very shielded from the effects of the Marcos era. But again, to credit them, I wasn't alive at that time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to experience that in its entirety. I can't speak to the economic, what felt like an economic boom at the time for some people. But I also can't speak to the horrors that other people experienced under said presidency or regime, depending on how you want to view it. So, yeah, it's safe to say that my family was on the conservative side of a lot of these things, and even socially so. When I went back home in 2011 or 2015, one of those two trips, I remember being told by my uncle that I couldn't eat at a certain restaurant because I think, like, people like us can't go in there, but I think it was not worded as nicely.
Mm. And what did that refer to? People of your social standing?
Social status,
okay.
Yeah. Where name still has meaning.
Of course.
If you're a Gallardo, you're expected to be such and such.
Mm-hmm.
People talk largely about names and how those names and clans have reputations.
Especially landholding ones,
yeah.
You know, for hundreds of years and under Spanish rule and so forth. Tell me about when you folks came. You know, do you have memories?
Yep.
We talked about this a little bit the other day of stepping off the plane.
My mind was, this was another plane trip. I don't think I really realized that we had left. So my parents had tried to sign us up for school. And so I think, put it this way, my parents were the prime of their careers when they left, late 30s, early 40s. They settled for a factory job to get started. And they tried to register me for school.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, can we take a day off to register our kids to school? I think the foreman just said, don't come back.
Mm.
And so they got fired.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like the first taste that, you know, I was on a different end of the socioeconomic spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that from others who've, you know, had status back in the Philippines and come over, and it's like you're starting from
scratch, essentially.
Yep. And what brought you folks to Alaska?
Well, we have family here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so my auntie Marvik lives here. We stayed with a family friend long. I think it was another 6 months. Then we moved to an apartment building, and that's when it kind of settled in my mind that things were different. Once we came to the U.S., there was really more of a push to really speak English, at least during my elementary school years. And I didn't get good at speaking the language. Well, some could argue I'm still not great at it. But, you know, if you drop me off in Manila, I'll survive.
Yeah, you'll get around, right?
I'll get around. And it's not like the struggling to get around. It's like I can...
You can converse with people.
I can converse with people,
right.
Ask for opinions, and go beyond the basics. But, you know, I still get the whole, oh, Kirk, your accent's funny. And that's fine.
Yeah. What was that like, winter sports in school? My son's never seen snow, by the way, so.
Oh. No, the first time I saw what I thought was snow, I saw frost.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the school bus, mm-hmm. and I said, oh, it's snow. And some fourth grader goes, that's not snow, that's frost, you idiot.
Yeah.
And, you know,
nice.
Like, I was not used to being insulted as a kid. That still sticks, where it's just like, man.
Yeah, kids are cruel.
Yeah.
And then you're different. I imagine, were there any other Filipinos in your...
Yeah.
Class? Oh, tell
so
me.
So I did meet somebody who was Filipino. Yeah, we sort of hit it off. He knew a few words in Tagalog, and we would talk about that. But he moved away when I was in second grade. Yeah, a lot of fun playground times. He showed me the ropes. And
What was your integration among other Alaska folks?
So for my experience, it wasn't so much about acculturation, but finding the community abroad.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really held on to was meeting other people like me.
Mm-hmm.
One of our neighbors was Filipino, and it turned out that many of our neighbors were Filipino as I grew up, and these would be my neighborhood friends. These would be the people I go to school with, and some of them didn't speak Tagalog, some did, but we all had those small cultural things. This idea that family's important, this idea that food is a big part of our culture, but like their children, my friends, weren't so keen on a lot of things, like little bits of culture that they had to learn later on that I knew.
Hmm. What do you mean they weren't keen on it? Like they didn't know it? Or when
they didn't know it in the sense that they weren't brought up with it?
I see, right.
You know, like...
Right.
Some families still do mano, where you grab an elder's hand, you place it on your forehead. I don't think any of my Filipino friends do that.
But you were raised with these customs and traditions within your family. So did you ever, as you're going through middle school and high school, did you come into any conflict just trying to preserve your own cultural traditions and then also, you know, forging friendships outside of being outside of other Filipinos? Yeah. Did you like struggle with that, or did you find acceptance among your friends who weren't Filipino?
Yeah, that wasn't too difficult. I mean, as a kid, I was pretty adaptable. I actually hung out with a lot of Koreans in middle school. It wasn't that I was trying to be different or trying to hide. Where I could find my culture, I looked for it. And that's a very weird and isolating feeling when your peers are not looking for the culture. So, for example, like, there would be other Filipinos, not necessarily my friends, where I'd talk about foods and hearing, you know, disgust from foods. And it's like, how can you say this about your own people's food? You know, like, you can at least say it's not for you. Don't just turn this into a focal point of disgust. Just a lot of people not really caring to speak the language, especially in middle school. Like, people really wanted to be quote-unquote American or to blend in. And I think that's probably why I gravitated towards a lot of the Korean kids in my school, is that the Korean community, the kids spoke Korean. In my eyes, I'm like, oh, these are people who value that aspect of their culture. And to me, I gravitated towards that. People who were what I perceived as strong in their culture. Right? And for me, I didn't see that in the Filipino community, partly because my parents didn't want to involve themselves in the Filipino community here in Anchorage.
And tell me about, like, flash forward to your path in linguistics. Is that right? Is the proper term?
I've always been a language nerd, starting with high school, learning Japanese. I had intended to go through school as a Japanese major. And then I took a linguistics course and said, I like this. Where can I study this in full? And so I transferred to the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And there, I ended up finishing the 3 years of Japanese. I then decided to go all out. And I did 2 total semesters of Mandarin. Then when I went to Canada for my exchange, I studied a semester of Arabic and a semester of Italian. And then when I graduated, I ended up studying a semester of German, and I applied for a German university and got in. And so from there, I did my work in my master's degree, which was also in linguistics, but in the sciences, psycholinguistics.
Wow, that's quite a few languages you just listed there. Maybe you can give me an Arabic lesson after we're done.
I can point you towards some resources for sure.
How are you using your background now in your present job?
So my position as the education interpretation manager, there was a huge project that began, I believe, in 2018 with the museum, with Dena'ina Ashnina, so the Dena'ina homeland. It was very central that things are land-based and talk about perspectives on the land. And I think one thing that I really latched onto is the idea that language conveys worldview. I think you can't deny that there is some relationship between one's environment and the development of its language. And you can see this based on how many terms we have for certain things.
Right. Hawaiians having many hundreds for rain and water and so forth.
Yeah. And so I have just been interested and have been developing partnerships with different organizations. And I'm tutoring 2 students in beginning Dena'ina just so that I can get them to self-study.
So that was my next question then. You have picked up Dena'ina. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, so the Dena'ina is the inland dialect pronunciation. And you'll hear Dena'ina, especially from older recordings of people like Shem Pete or Fedosia Sakaloff, who speak upper inlet and outer inlet, respectively. And so many people get very caught up on, is there a right pronunciation as opposed to, are there multiple pronunciations?
Yeah, we have that same, grappled with that in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii. Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I think on a less serious level, we think about words like pecan, 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 Caribbean, Caribbean, mm-hmm. caramel, caramel. Mm-hmm. And I'm a person that likes variety. Mm-hmm. And there might be some circumstances where I use one over the other. But in words where I'm not like so hung up on, I really will use free variation where I can.
I really love that perspective because it is code switching in a way to be able to use the words that people are comfortable with using mm-hmm. among them and then yourself too, right?
The perspective I've learned to develop on a lot of things, not just language, is the plurality of things and not looking at an objective one way. Mm-hmm. Just like there's no one way to be Filipino. That was something I really struggled with for a long, long time. Am I Filipino enough? Am I too Filipino? And I think I'm at a point where I'm like, I don't care. I'm alive. I paid my bills on time. And I think that's good enough.
That's great. Because that leads me really to what I wanted to talk about, which is identity. And the unfair question that I've been posing to everyone, which is, do you feel American, more American or more Filipino?
My heart tells me that I feel more Filipino, but experience with other people has told me I'm not quite in either.
Tell me about traversing those spaces and how that shifts between.
It's worth considering that a lot of populations come from some origin point, right? Where if you live in an urban population, there are people that grew up with an urban background and they have their commonalities. You grow up in a rich neighborhood, people have their socioeconomic peculiarities and things that they grow up with, and those like bond people together. I would say that because I grew up, or I was born in a family that was relatively well off, a lot of the discussions on poverty in the homeland were foreign to me.
When you encountered those later, I take
yes.
it, right?
So when I meet people that talked about how hard life was, and that was sort of their way of connecting with other mm-hmm. Filipinos, is, oh, life was hard back home. I said, no, it wasn't.
Right. This is a real contrast.
I never knew that ever. And then I would, you know, as recently as my last trip back home, I'd have this feeling that my cousins really thought that, like, oh, this is the American. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's fair. That's not a diss at me or a dig at me, but it's true. Like, I can't deny that I grew up here, that I celebrate things like Thanksgiving or Santa Claus Christmas. A lot of the Christmas traditions changed for me when I came here. I realized that there were a lot of people that I met, or some would be watching the Filipino channel, TFC. And so some of them had that connect, and there were others who just didn't care. And, you know, for me, it was just thinking, okay, they're not like me. And then looking at my cousins, I'm like, wait, they're not like me. And it can feel almost isolating to be in that weird in-between spot. Mm-hmm. And not so much in-between that I'm in between two cultures, but I'm in between two vantage points where,
right.
Yeah.
Aren't we always negotiating that otherness space? I mean, I think as human beings, it's just, mm-hmm. it's just like the perennial human condition. When you step outside your door, you're like, how am I going to deal with, you know, a stranger here mm-hmm. or someone in the store or that otherness? I mean, I feel it. I mean, I'm acutely aware of that, not necessarily culturally, but just being different in mm-hmm. whatever way you're different, right? Yeah. And it's interesting to explore that through the cultural lens.
Oh, yeah.
And the social lens and the economic lens. I mean, it's all there, and mm-hmm. anyone who's sensitive enough will definitely notice those things.
Yeah.
So you recognize when you're in those spaces and then do you adapt to people that you meet who are a little bit different from you? Or do you feel, does it feel like awkward?
I think that it's always awkward. And that's a funny thing. Like, I think I'm a fairly awkward person. Or at least I think that the way that I speak can be fairly awkward. It takes a while for me to get comfortable with people. Mm-hmm. It takes continued prolonged contact, and then I'll speak the way that I speak. I mean, even this voice right here is sort of my professional.
Oh, okay.
My voice that I'd like to have in a professional space. I don't want to speak this way to my friends. They look at me funny. Yeah, I think learning to navigate the space is what I've done, and I don't really think about it actively anymore. I just do.
Right.
What can I do to make this social interaction go smoothly?
Mm, okay.
And I think that's what most people do day to day.
Exactly.
Like, I think the clearest example is if you were raised to have a certain degree of respect of your parents, and you're really angry, and in the heat of the moment, you're still thinking, like, how do I not let a curse word slip out?
So tell me about the generational divide between you and your parents. You know, I'm going to ask you all the hard questions, right?
When I think of this, I try to distance myself first to understand where it comes from. I think there's a lot of different factors that contribute to the generational divide. How much of Spanish culture is really still held in regard? How many people think the patriarchy is a concept to be followed as part of Filipino culture?
Mm-hmm.
The effect of filial piety from Chinese influence, non-Catholic, pre-Hispanic beliefs. Like, all of these things play into older, newer generational divides, obviously. But with my parents, I think I try to place things into the mindset of they are a product of the post-war boom. My parents were baby boomers, are baby boomers, and they grew up in a world that saw a lot of transitions. There was the transitions of the Philippines really seeing itself as a country of Filipinos,
mm-hmm.
This national identity. And what's really funny is, I don't remember who it was, or yeah, my mom was speaking to somebody from Hawaii and asked them, oh, are you Filipino? And the person said, no, I'm Ilocano.
Okay.
And to me, that's like, oh, the ethnic group identification is where your thing lies. And I realized that there were many Filipino people, or Ilocano people, I should say, who left before the Philippines became a country, you know, in its 1930s declaration. Like, it's important to know that we definitely were so many different people. I mean, today the Philippines recognizes something like 180 established languages.
Mm-hmm.
4% of which are not native to the Philippines. So you have Spanish, like the Philippine variant of Spanish, which is distinct from Chavacano, which is distinct from, you know, Zabangueño. But there's so many perspectives. So to say Filipino is kind of an interesting thing.
Well, it might be like saying you're American, you know, in some ways.
Yeah.
It's very broad.
It's very broad, yes.
And so where do you stand on your, you know, social and religious beliefs? Like, how are they different from your parents, for example?
Sure. So I am Byzantine Catholic, which I was not born Byzantine Catholic. I was born Roman Catholic, like 86% of the Filipino population. My parents are very strong, devout Catholics. I think now they pray like the rosary every day. They watch daily mass on television and then attend mass weekly. At some point, I just did not really vibe with any of that. And there was a point where I was seeing a lot of these newer movements where people wanted to bring in drums to the church and play with electric guitars. And part of me didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I kind of just went through the motions of going to church.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really do much with that. And I think at some point, I decided to go to the church with the domes on Arctic. And I found, you know, a sense of religion that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And I think also another part of it was I really strongly associate the Roman Catholic Church with a lot of the horrors of Spanish colonialism.
Yeah.
And it became more and more difficult for me to grasp that. There are many people who are, I would say, are much stronger than myself, who are able to distance the crimes of colonization with the Catholic Church. I am not one of those people. For me, the step was to go into a Byzantine Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Something adjacent.
Something adjacent that allowed me to continue being what I was without leaving it. But, you know, obviously that's not the real solution. That was because I think Christianity, all in all, is guilty of many, many things. But for me, this was the religion that I chose and still choose to follow. And so good and bad, I think it's my individual responsibility to be a good person mm-hmm. in that regard and to not repeat those crimes.
Your politics, are they different too?
Oh, I hope my parents don't hear this. Yeah, I am definitely, whatever conservative is, I am not it.
Well, that's just a misnomer, I think, for the present manifestation of that. So,
with a lot of things like I mean, even looking back in the last 60 years, any president that has aligned with the Republican Party in the U.S., I don't align with any of the presidents in the Philippines that have aligned with values similar to Ferdinand Marcos. I have not aligned with, and even when there were presidents that were seen as somewhat liberal, I was very apprehensive to put any kind of support because, A, I was living here and didn't really get too involved as a 13, 14-year-old in Filipino politics, and B, I didn't see it day to day. I can't speak for the presidency of Fidel Ramos, even though I was alive in that time. I was 6 when he left the presidency. I don't know anything about ERAP. That was 1998. And by the time I was in the States, you know, I was even further removed. And then by the time I had a kind of conscience to look into politics, and that's embarrassingly late, I really want to say within the last, like, 3 or 4 years. By the time that developed, it became really difficult for me to establish myself as a voice that I felt was relevant. When Rodrigo Duterte was elected, I had family members say some really awful things.
About him or to you?
About him and about things regarding policies. And the problem was that, like, I'm not there. Yes, I have a conscience, and yes, I can argue things from my perspective. But I think, ultimately, the current political climate has just brought out the ugliest sides of people. I have seen things typed online and said in person that I just never thought would come out of a relative's mouth.
Yeah, because, you know, we're going to solve our problems on social media.
Right. I mean, if you like and share.
Right. Because, you know, all of us get convinced by the other side on social media.
Right. But that's the thing. It's I don't agree with the politics of Ferdinand Marcos, but there are some interesting points that it definitely made the Philippines look good in the 60s for whatever he was doing. And so he was, I would say, one of the most remembered presidents just because of, you know, impact, good and bad. But this was at a time when tiger economies were being looked at favorably in the 1980s. And it was like, oh, like, things are happening now. In the 60s, post-war boom, everyone was doing great. But, you know, when you see all of these talks of human rights abuses, it gets complicated because do you blame the individual? Do you blame the people that were under him who he may not have had direct control over? It gets messy. And ultimately, you just have to pick your viewpoint and argue for it.
Do you, though, or do you just keep digging to figure out where, you know, how complicated this story is? Because that's what I find fascinating is the digging part.
Sure.
And it's so complicated, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about the overlay of, like, colonialism, feudalism, yeah. You know, indentured servitude in some ways, capitalist, you know, the whole, it's so many different structures playing into.
That's the digging for me has become very shallow at this point, and I'll admit to that. I will literally say, okay, is there anything that violates human rights law?
Right. That's a good standard.
That's where I'll draw the line. If there's anything that seems somewhat suspicious, unethical, look at it. That's when I'll just be very critical about it.
Right.
I don't necessarily like to support candidates because, one, I can't vote in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I'm not a dual citizen.
Right. We talked about that before. Remind me.
Yeah. So when I got my citizenship in 2004, I was 12 years old. My dad took the citizenship to test for us. But under Philippine law, I can get it back. But under U.S. law, we had effectively relinquished our Filipino citizenship. Yeah. I had looked at dual citizenship options because the idea of owning land back in the Philippines is kind of nice. If there's anything I miss, people aside, I love you cousins, I love you uncles, aunts, I love you grandpa. Like, the whole is my, like, love. You can get it here, but it's not the same as if it's not like when you see the guy carrying the two massive tins and he's just yelling it out and you're like, that's my man.
Yeah.
Let's go. And yeah, like it sounds funny, but I would be almost willing to move back for that. You know, if I had a job, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I had a guarantee that I could do linguistic
you could work there. Yeah.
Linguistic work on, say, linguistic policy, I would love to move back, you know, but at the same time, I have roots here.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I have a lot of connections with the Dena'ina language community, and I have put in a lot of work. And to leave that seems to be a disservice to that community. And I have to think very critically about those things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like you need multiple selves. I mean,
right?
It seems like... On one hand, the Philippines is starving for people like you, you know, who know
sure.
so many languages. You can be, you know, adept at being in different spaces and could make a difference. And on the other hand, things are so entrenched and it's super depressing.
Yeah. And I think that, like, to really think about that layer of complexity, it's... We have to think about our purpose and we have to be purposeful about where we are. That's not something I think about a lot because let's be real. I think for a lot of people, once you have a daily routine, you're just going through the motions and you're just trying to get yourself to the end of your workday and to go home and do something you enjoy. What's frightening for a lot of people is when people get stuck in that rut, they don't know what to do with their free time.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes kind of terrifying.
It's not that way for you though. You do a lot of different things.
I'm a nerd.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're like me, you're not bored, right?
Yeah. In my spare time, I will study, language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ashamed to say that, but I'm ashamed to say that into a mic.
Oh, I think it's great. No, that's really great. I mean, you do have to pick a purpose, though, as you're saying. I mean, we're only here for a short time. And what impact are we going to make in the world? And where is that best served? I think about that all the time, vis-a-vis art. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's my personal things that I like to do for myself. And then there's the broader questions and, like, times that we're living in, which are unprecedented. And it's like, okay, I could do that little personal project. Or... I can look at some of these global issues too.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I feel like motivated and super passionate by, as you do, being in service to other people through your work in some way. And that sort of takes precedent, right?
Yeah. And I think just circling back to that other point with people being talented, that's something I've realized is, and many people will point this out to political factors, but there are so many brilliant people by one reason or another, and it's not unique to the Filipino diaspora, but there are people that just do great things because the opportunity is afforded them. You see this with, like the headline will be like, boy genius or 13-year-old middle school girl figures this out. And then the first thing they'll mention is, so she's an immigrant from so-and-so, or they're this from this background. And people hyperfixate on like, oh yes, like proud to be from here, proud to be this. And, you know, I used to get really irritated at that as a kid. Then people would say proud to be Pinoy. And I'm like, okay, like what does that have to do with anything, you know?
Yeah, because people are individual, don't you think? You know, and expression of their individuality is so unique to each person.
Yeah.
Through their culture or otherwise.
I believe that, but I also believe that we're intertwined. We are in a web of different selves. both as individuals and within a community.
Mm-hmm.
Like myself, there are different aspects of myself that I have to interact every day.
Mm-hmm.
But those different selves talk to other people.
Exactly. Well, I have learned so much from you, just from your perspective with language and what you've talked about with your family and your story. Is there anything else you want to add since we're, you know, talking about culture and many things?
Yeah. I think that, like, my thoughts have always just been on what I want to do with respect to my culture. I had considered going back home and learning to do one of the cultural arts, like hat making or learning pottery.
Right, right. You talked about that.
But I don't know if now is the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a critical point because we're losing so many potters. We're losing hat makers. We're losing mm-hmm. weavers. But I'm sure for every single person who has the same thought as I do, somebody else will, you know, follow through. And that's my hope.
Well, it's been so incredible. I've learned so much. Thank you so much, Kurt. Yeah.